From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Great to see you, too. Thank you. Happy to see you. I share your excitement. We got a great show for you today. But first, some good news. According to a poll by a completely unreliable internet company, the U.S. is still the, quote, coolest nation on earth. That's right. USA. Isn't that great? Bankrupt is the new black. And who better to celebrate that distinction than the modern icon of cool, Fonzie himself. Mr. Henry Winkler will be here. He'll be joining us to play our games later. But first, it's your turn. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm CL, and I live in Belmore, New York. On Long Island.
You're CL?
My name is Carol Lee. It's two E's on the end of Carol, and everybody always messes it up.
So why even bother? I understand.
Why even bother?
Well, welcome to the show, CL. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a blogger and a deputy editor for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi.
Next up, a writer for the Boston Globe magazine and the author of Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hi, CL.
And lastly, a comedian performing at the Crest Theater in Sacramento, California on September 30th, Miss Paula Poundstone.
Hi, Paula.
Hey, CL. It's me, Pee-Pee.
Pee-Pee?
Yeah. It's Paula and Poundstone, but people mess it up.
CL, welcome to the show. You're going to start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl Castle's voice, on your voicemail. Ready to go?
I think I am.
Let us do it. Here is your first quote.
It was one of the worst pregame shows I've ever seen.
That was CNN's Alex Castellanos reacting to what big event on Thursday night?
I think that had to be Obama's speech to the to the Congress.
Yes, his big job speech. That's right. Very good. Very good. After a week of preparation, the president reached up into the attic and got out his angry face, which he hasn't used since someone bogarted his Chablis back in college. He insisted that this $450 billion jobs plan would not add to the deficit and would be paid for, partly through cuts in other government spending, and the rest from a $200 billion Groupon he got from China. But as he said to Congress, you got to act on that now because it expires. And of course, you can only use it if a bunch of other Western democracies also sign up. But he's hopeful. So it's called the American Jobs Act. Very straightforward, very, very descriptive. This is an improvement. They failed to come up with a catchy name for their health care bill, which might have doomed it, really, in public opinion. So they had to get this one right, the American Jobs Act. That's good. It was a compromise between the first idea, which was the Infrastructure and Actualization of the Labor Initiative Revival Act, and the other idea, which came from Joe Biden, it was money good.
You know, you can't accuse Obama of having a hair trigger temper.
No. He's, yeah. You can only imagine what his children get away with.
Malia, I'm giving you exactly a week and a half to stop that.
Exactly. If you don't get your homework done, 3 years from now, I will deliver an impassioned speech about it.
Unless you're busy that night.
All right, very good, CL. Here, next up for you, it's a plaintive quote from a GOP event the night before, Wednesday.
I kind of feel like the pinata here at the party.
That was somebody who felt like everybody was just picking on him. at the GOP debate. He was right. Who was it?
Oh, how can I not know this? I watched it. Everybody picking on him. It had to be Rick Perry.
It was Rick Perry. Very good, the governor of Texas. He was making his debut at a GOP presidential primary debate. If he didn't want to get hit like a pinata, he really should not have stuffed his belly with candy and worn his papier-mâché suit. I'm just saying.
I think that he is way leaping to conclusions to feel that he's the pinata at the party. Yeah. A pinata is full of happy surprises.
Yeah, really.
So Rick Perry did, in fact, get some attacks from the other candidates. He's now the front runner in the polls. But he went on the attack, too. He thought he'd go after Mitt Romney by comparing him unfavorably to Michael Dukakis. That's a low blow in American politics. Romney responded by saying, Perry created jobs slower than George W. Bush did. And Perry said, not true. And Romney said, that's true. And Perry said, nuh-uh. And Romney said, uh-huh. And all the pundits decided that uh-huh is more presidential than nuh-uh. So Romney was declared to have won. That summed it up for you.
And then they all walked down the stage and hit Ron Paul with a stick and a whole bunch of nuts fell out.
Perry was challenged by the moderators on his dismissal of global warming science, and so Perry compared himself to Galileo, who was, in Perry's view, somebody who was once in the scientific minority and then proved right. Also, Galileo was one of the only two scientists Perry has ever heard of, and he didn't think that the professor on Gilligan's Island would have worked in this context.
He's not that good with science.
No.
I saw that video of him with the kid asking him about evolution and how he said, what did he say to him? He said, well, that's a theory that's out there. And the video was just, it cut off there, so you didn't get to hear the kid's follow-up question about gravity, but I think it would have been great.
All right, CL, here is your last quote.
The check may never be in the mail again.
That was columnist Michael Walsh in the New York Post warning us what big part of the U.S. government might just disappear.
What? Oh, wait, can you say it again?
Sure.
What part of our government might disappear?
Yeah, big part of the federal government. Go ahead, Carol.
The check may never be in the mail again.
Oh, the post office!
The post office! Yes, yes, post office. Two shocking headlines in the news this week. First, the U.S. Post Office is on the verge of default. And second, we still have a U.S. Post Office. I know you're thinking the Post Office is only good for delivering unwanted Lillian Vernon catalogs to housewives and very much wanted Victoria's Secret catalogs to their husbands. But once upon a time, children, people used to painstakingly copy out their emails on paper with a pen and pay someone to deliver them 4 or 5 days in the future. We also had just 3 TV channels, we churned our own butter, and we used our phone for talking. You guys still use mail?
Sure.
You write
yes,
letters?
Absolutely.
People?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't trust them newfangled machines.
Yeah.
Are you
never,
kidding?
Yeah.
I put a stamp on the monitor screen usually when I send an email.
I still use mail, and here's the really odd part. The delivery of the mail still is part of the arc of my emotional life of the day.
Really? In
yeah, I still go out to the mailbox thinking, you know, like the Wells Fargo wagon, like maybe something. And then there it is, Bed Bath & Beyond, 20% off.
Carl, how did CL do in our quiz?
CL, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail.
Well done. Wow.
Excited,
thank you, Sarah.
You guys rock. I
thank
love
you
this
so
show.
Much. Take
thank
care.
You.
I'm waiting for a letter from my baby. Just a note would mean so much to me. My heart beats fast each time I see the postman. Each time he passed, there's been no mail for me.
Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula, our long national nightmare is over. According to the Department of Homeland Security, Americans might soon be able to do what?
Keep their shoes on at the check-in at the airport.
Yeah, at the security line. Yes, yeah, very good. Yeah. Keep your shoes on. Very good, Paul.
I cannot wait.
It's going to be exciting. Years have studied. Have shown that the only way to hurt somebody with your shoe at the airport is with the noxious fumes that are released when you remove it in the security line.
You know, even after all this time, you still go to the airport and you're standing there and some lady says, "Really? I have to take off my shoes?"
I know. Like, where have you been the last 6 years? Here's the good news. You'll now have the delight of leaving your shoes on your feet as you enter security. Here's the bad news. They're introducing a new procedure, the freedomoscopy. You will be able to wear your shoes along with a paper hospital gown. It'll be great.
You can leave your shoes on, baby, and I don't mind. I know you've worn them all day, but can't you wear them tonight? You can leave your shoes on, honey.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff, the listener game. We call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Shannon calling from Memphis, Tennessee.
Hey, how are things in Memphis, a great town?
It's pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah.
Only pretty good?
It's great.
There you go. That's what I wanted to hear. Well, welcome to the show, Shannon. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Shannon's topic?
These shoulder pads make me look fat.
Being a sports star isn't just entourages and concussions. No, there's a dark side, too. Our panelists are going to read you three stories about the problems of being a professional athlete. Guess the true story, and you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. First, let's hear from Kiri O'Connor.
Brian Christie is a respected Canadian pro figure skater, but Christie has a secret. Christie is completely unable to perform unless his 6-foot Burmese python, Mr. Slinky, is in the arena. This oddity came to light recently when rink officials caught Christie and his manager trying to smuggle Mr. Slinky into a Winnipeg arena in an oversized beer cooler for a charity salute to the Sound of Music on Ice. Christie was seen backstage shaking and apparently in tears. He was unable to take the ice to perform his signature piece, The Lonely Goatherd, in Lederhosen. The obsession began when Christie first met the snake during a Britney Spears-themed show in which Christie skated to I'm a Slave for You with the serpent around his neck. He said, "It was the best skating I ever did in my life. I got hooked." Fans have started an online petition drive to allow the python into future performances called Snakes for Skates.
A figure skater who's lost. Without his python, your next story of an athlete in need comes from Charlie Pierce.
Mark Anthony Delarue is one of the most promising young jockeys in the country, having piled up an impressive string of winners at Louisiana Downs and at Saratoga during the recent meet there. He's managed to do this despite one overwhelming physical disadvantage. He is violently allergic to horses. Delarue discovered this as a teenager working as a stable boy at Louisiana Downs. Doctors told him that the substances in a horse's perspiration caused him a severe rash. His father, a veteran trainer, hit upon the notion of encasing his son partially in bubble wrap. Now, before every race, Delarue applies a mixture of vegetable oil and desiccant to his lower body and his arms, after which he winds the bubble wrap tightly around himself and then goes out on the track. The other jockeys have taken to calling him Bubble Boy, but Delarue already has an endorsement deal with Staples. He won 4 straight starts at the fairgrounds, and he is the 4th leading money winner this year at Saratoga. "You hardly notice it before the race," said Paul Lamoureux, another veteran jockey, "but when Mark Anthony goes by, he sort of squishes and pops. It's weird sounding." "The biggest thing I worry about is the effect on the horse," Delarue explained. "The last thing you want pounding down the stretch is a racehorse thinking somebody's shooting at him."
A jockey who's so allergic to horses he needs to wrap himself in bubble wrap. And your last story of the perils of play comes from Paula Poundstone.
Big League Baseball is a tough game. That's why Los Angeles Angels pitcher Jerome Williams was incorrectly called Jeremy for 2 years after joining his first big league team, the San Francisco Giants. "They just called me that," says Williams. "I just rolled with it. I was a rookie, and I didn't want to tell anybody because I was scared." He believes that the relief pitcher Felix Rodriguez was the first to mistakenly call him Jeremy, and the others just followed suit. He recalls that manager Felipe Alou was the only one who didn't mistakenly call him Jeremy for 2 years. Felipe never really called me by my name. He was just like, hey, guy, come here, guy. After 2 years, however, he felt comfortable enough with pitching coach Dave Righetti to tell him that his name was Jerome, not Jeremy. In another year or so, he may reveal that he is a second baseman. Or perhaps that he never played baseball at all until when delivering clean uniforms to the locker room, Felipe Alou said, hey, guy, get dressed and get out there.
All right.
Here are your three choices. Is it from Kerry O'Connor, a figure skater who simply cannot perform without his python nearby? From Charlie Pierce, a jockey so allergic to horses he must wrap himself in bubble wrap to ride? Or from Paula Poundstone, a professional baseball player so terrified he was unable to correct anybody when they called him by the wrong name for 2 years?
Oh, my goodness. I think I'm going to go with the baseball player.
So you're going to work your way through it. You're going to choose Paula's story of the San Francisco Giants player. Well, we have what might be a familiar voice to you to bring the real story.
He was always Jerome to we broadcasters with the Giants, but a teammate, seeing his name written out, said, Jerome.
Oh,
that was the immortal voice of John Miller, play-by-play announcer for the San Francisco Giants, telling us about the poor guy who simply did not have the guts to correct his teammates when they mispronounced his name. You were right. Paula Poundstone had the real story. You've earned a point for Paula Poundstone. You've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting in your home answering machine. Well done.
Okay, thank
Congratulations.
You.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now the game where we ask somebody who's done a lot to do one more silly little thing. Now, when I was a kid, some time ago, there was one absolute model of cool. It wasn't James Dean, it wasn't Brando, it was the Fonz. On the TV show Happy Days, played by Henry Winkler, he got all the girls, and even more amazingly, he could make the vending machine spit out free sodas with a blow from his fist. Yeah, okay, I was 10. That was impressive to me. He's still cool. Henry Winkler, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. How are you?
I'm so happy to be here.
So thrilled to talk to you. So first of all, we were interested to see you have a new book out. It's about the least Fonziest thing we can imagine, fly fishing in Montana.
That's right. It's called I Never Met an Idiot on the River.
Right. And what's interesting is that you had your wife of many years do the introduction. And
that was a mistake.
Yes, because she says, and I'll quote her, only in the serene beauty of fly fishing country does the crazed and competitive Henry Winkler appear. Is this true?
Well, the thing is that, you know, in a boat, you have, I'm in the front, and I have all the way to the guide and his oars.
Yeah.
My wife is in the back. She has all the way to the guide and his oars.
Right,
and
from the other end. Right.
Her water looks fishier than mine.
Right. So you're like, turn this thing around.
Well, no, I don't wait. I just start to fish her water.
And you do all this, and you do not keep the fish.
No, I always put the fish back. I won't even eat a trout in a restaurant.
Okay.
No.
And for someone like me, who does not fly fish,
yeah.
This seems astoundingly pointless. You go to all this effort.
You know what it is?
What?
It is, it's you, it's zen. It's like a washing machine for your brain, because you cannot concentrate on anything else except you and that fish, or you lose the fish.
Right. Do you think the fish wishes there was some other way you could find to relax? Just saying.
That is so funny. I don't have an answer.
All right. Now, your most famous role was Fonzie, the Fonz. Now, for people who were not lucky enough or old enough to have watched Happy Days, can you describe that character?
He was a mechanic.
Yeah.
He was a leather-jacketed, motorcycle-riding, loyal friend.
Yeah.
He was so tough that he intimidated you by just the look. He never actually raised his hand to anybody.
Yeah.
And I, as a very short Jew, that is the same experience.
I understand. Have people, I mean, it's been years, but it was such an indelible role. Have, I mean, action stars talk about sometimes how people come up and challenge them to fights because they play tough men.
All right, here's the great thing. Yeah. Honestly, to this moment in time that we're talking, I have never been challenged. I have only been treated as a good friend.
Yeah.
My wife and I have been stopped on the street of New York City by gangs who said, oh, wait a minute. Are you Henry Winkler? Give this man some room.
There you go. We got to ask you about this. We have to ask you, of course, about jumping the shark.
Yes.
Now, I actually don't remember the setup. This refers to an episode of Happy Days. Can you tell me what the setup was?
We went to Hollywood.
The characters did.
And I had to water ski, which I knew how to do, and my very short German parents would write me letters, and they would say, tell the producers you know how to water ski. This is a great thing here. You could tell them that you could do this. I finally showed the producers the letter as a joke.
Because, wait a minute, your parents were, like, worried you were the star of the most successful sitcom on television, and they were like, but maybe he can get a little more money if they know he can... Maybe he can make a success of himself if he can just water ski.
If I water ski, I will have it made in the shade.
Right. So that you show this
Listen,
to producers.
I was invited to the White House. My father said, go and take cake.
All right, so that you show the producers, this is back in the 70s, you show the producers the letter from your parents, hey, I can water ski, you point out to them.
Yes.
So they come up with a story in which Fonzie has to water ski over sharks,
yes,
over a tank
I did,
of sharks?
Well, I jumped over a shark. About that time, a guy named John Heim, who now has a radio show,
yeah,
he was sitting in his dorm room with his good friend, and they came up with the expression, jump the shark.
Right, because they decided, and you know, that Happy Days at that point started to be less good, shall we say, than it used to be. And they said, the moment when Happy Days started to go downhill is when Arthur Fonzarelli jumped the shark. And so jumping the shark became this universal phrase for the moment when something starts to go bad.
Yes.
How does it feel then to be the person who enacted the single most important cultural indicator of impending decline?
You know, I would like to say proud.
Yes.
But the fact is, I talked about this human being for 33 years, and I finally met him 3 months ago in New York City.
Really? And how did that meeting go? The guy who invented the phrase...
We had a wonderful time. It was really lovely to meet him.
I have to ask you a question, and we've only been talking for a little while, but I get the sense that you've never met anybody you weren't utterly delighted and happy to meet. Is that true? Is there
you know what? My glass is half full, but there are three or four people I really dislike.
Really? Can you name or describe any one of them?
Unfortunately, I can't. One's a movie star.
I understand.
You know, I met Henry, I think, on the shuttle at Dulles. Wasn't that when we met, Henry?
I think so, yeah.
I'll tell you, I turned around, and here was this guy standing behind me, and the thing that was, you know how when you meet somebody and they're out of context, and it takes your head a couple of ka-chings to figure out where you know them from. And what struck me about him was, I was like, well, look at that happy little fella.
You know, I'm doing the show from standing under my desk right now.
There you go. Well, Henry Winkler, we are absolutely delighted to talk to you, and we have, in fact, invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
Hey, you took all my money.
Wow, come on. Was that Castle?
That was. Uncanny, isn't it? Well, a Fonzie scheme would involve helping others through coolness and jumping sharks. A Ponzi scheme is something else entirely, as you may have heard about in the GOP debate this week. We're going to ask you three questions about Ponzi schemes. If you get two right, you'll win our prize from one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Henry Winkler playing for?
Oh, well, the Fonz is playing for Michelle Treastman of Arlington, Virginia.
Wow.
Yeah. You ready to do this?
I'm so ready, and I'm hoping.
All right. We'll start with Charles Ponzi,
yeah.
The original Ponzi schemester.
Right.
In 1920, he promised his investors a 50% return in just a few weeks, but some people were suspicious. So to prove he was in the up and up, he agreed to do what? A, appear with a mind reader who could discern his true intentions. B, buy everyone in Boston where he lived a lobster. Or C, bring each investor to his mother's grave so that he could swear on it.
Wow. Okay, you know what? I'm going to go with my instinct that got me here tonight.
Yes.
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with what?
Oh, the first one.
No, I mean, say that again.
Oh, I have to go. All right. I'm going to go with A.
A, all right. That's right, in fact. Ponzi agreed to appear with a mind reader at a Kiwanis club, but nothing came of it because audience members were far more interested in investing with him. He was in jail less than a week later. Next question. The Greater Ministries International Church of Florida ran a Ponzi scheme on its own congregants in the 1990s. Mm-hmm. Their get-rich-quick scheme was based on what? A, learning the trick of multiplying loaves and fishes from God. B, searching for lost Spanish treasure ships in Lake Okeechobee. Or C, investment-grade collectible Happy Meal toys.
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, investment-grade collectible Happy Meal toys. I'm afraid it was A, or A. The minister in charge of the scheme said God had modernized the loaves and fishes trick and taught him to apply it to the precious metals market. He made off with $500 million.
Wow.
All right, you have one more chance. If you get this one right, you win. And now we'll turn to the greatest Ponzi schemer of all, Bernie Madoff.
Oh, yes.
He is now being held at a prison camp in Butner, North Carolina.
He's
serving, I think, a 150-year sentence.
Yes, not long enough.
Not long enough. Now, the prison camp is actually pretty tough, but it does provide what for the use of its inmates? A, an Indian sweat lodge. B, a climbing wall, or C, a Bloomberg terminal for financial news.
Wow.
Yes. My advice here would be to trust your instincts.
Okay. Well, you know what?
Well, if your instincts don't work, trust Fonzie's.
A sweat lodge.
Yes. A, an Indian sweat lodge. B, a climbing wall. Or C, a Bloomberg terminal for financial news.
Okay, now, oh my goodness. Okay, I'm going to go with A.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
I'm going to go with A.
Yeah, yes, you're right. It is A, an Indian sweat lodge. Carl. How did Henry Winkler do?
Hey, the Fonz had two correct answers, Peter. So he wins for Michelle Treistman.
Well done, sir. Well done. Henry Winkler's new book is called I've Never Met an Idiot on the River, Reminiscences and Photos of Fly Fishing. Henry Winkler, thank you so much for being with us. What a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Henry. Bye, everybody.
In just a minute, Carl dares to wear rhyme after Labor Day in our listener limerick challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, though, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kiri, UCLA student Chris Gian is a go-getter. Before his senior year, he wanted a great vacation, and he got one. What did he do?
Before his senior year, he wanted a great vacation, and he got one.
Yeah, he just did this recently. Apparently, they have great hostels in Tripoli.
He went to Libya?
To do what?
Be a freedom fighter?
Exactly. He joined the rebels in Libya.
Isn't that a great vacation?
It sure absolutely is.
A
reporter covering the civil war in Libya noticed something odd about one of the rebels. Instead of fatigues, he was wearing an L.A. Lakers jersey. Chris Gian, he'll be returning to UCLA for his senior year, said, quote, I told my friends a sick vacation would be to come here and fight with the rebels. Gian says it will all be worth it if the Libyan people are free and if he can get internship credit.
He's going to get lucky in about a nanosecond.
You think so? And this is true. When the reporter found him, he said to the guy, he said this on CNN, he said, whatever you do, don't tell my parents I'm here.
Man.
They think I'm drunk in Cabo.
Exactly. Paula, a Welsh woman who went on a date with a man she met on Facebook, was surprised to discover he wasn't looking for romance. He was looking for what?
Welsh instructions.
No. Some vowels. No. Welsh joke. Among his likes on Facebook, people who keep the engine running while he knocks off liquor stores.
Oh, right. I do know. Yeah, he made her help him rob.
By performing what role?
She have to drive the car?
Yeah, she was the getaway driver. He was looking for a getaway driver. Leah Gibbs and Adam Minton seemed to really hit it off when they met on Facebook, chatted back and forth. But it turns out they wanted different things. She wanted to really get to know him as a person. He wanted an escape from a crime scene. So she drives over to his house to watch a DVD. That was their plan. But first he says, hey, can you give me a lift down to the local betting parlor? And so they go down, and he runs in, and he comes out holding a bag of money and a knife. And he jumps in her car, and he yells, go, go, go! And this is the great part. She says that it was only later, while she was driving him back home, and he became rude, that's when she, quote, decided the date was over. Charlie.
Uh-huh.
Charlie, following the success of room and house sharing sites like Couchsurfer and Home Exchange, a new smartphone app called Clue enables you to rent your what to people in need?
Your library to Colonel Mustard so he can kill somebody.
No. Although I see why you said that. In this case, Clue is spelled C. L-O-O.
Oh, so you can rent your water closet?
Yes, your bathroom.
Your facilities?
Yeah, exactly. We've all been there.
You're
out in the big city, and you're in need of a
Running
clean...
Running out of synonyms here, Peter.
I know. No, it's your bathroom. Your bathroom. We'll be frank. We've all been there. You're out in the big city, and you're in need of a clean bathroom. Well, all you need do now is pull out your smartphone, start up your Clue app, search for nearby private homes who have signed into the service, contact the owners till you find somebody that is home and can let you in, wait while they do a background check on you, and then realize this has taken way too long and start shopping for a new pair of pants.
Mommy, why is that man jumping from one foot to the other on the sidewalk?
Exactly. This is being sold as a kind of social networking app. You know, so you know, use bathrooms, meet people, it'll be fun, you know. You have a common interest. You need a bathroom, they have a bathroom. You have so much to talk about. But it raises the question, who would you rather meet less? Somebody not smart enough to find a Starbucks or a gas station, or somebody willing to rent their bathroom out to strangers? Ooh, gotta put some fresh potpourri over the toilet. Don't know who's gonna show up today.
It really does invite, yeah. Because there's got to be a lot of different categories, even in terms of the need for the bathroom.
There are people who are just casual and people are looking for a serious relationship with your toilet. Is that what you're saying?
I
think there's got to be some sort of time limit here, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you're praying out for dinner and some, 70-year-old guy from Iowa has been in there for an hour and a half.
Exactly.
I mean, it's going to complicate things tremendously.
Yeah, he didn't say that on the application.
No.
I would be willing to leave a soda bottle on the porch.
All right. We'll let America know that.
Yeah.
Do you want
my address?
No. And Paula, passengers on some Virgin Atlantic flights are being warned of an unexpected risk during flight. The airline will now tell passengers in advance if there's a chance that what might happen.
The internet might cut out.
No. I'll give you a hint. They'll say, well, the exits are over there, the life jackets are under your seat, and the Kleenex is in your seat back.
They might play a really sad song.
Close enough. They're going to be warning passengers that the in-flight movie might make them cry.
I love that.
You do?
Here's
what happened.
Yes.
41% of male Virgin Atlantic travelers admitted that one time or another they had hid under blankets to cover their tears during particularly moving in-flight films. So the airline announced they're going to hold up signs warning passengers if the movie is a potential tearjerker.
Oh, yes.
Where did they get blankets?
Ha! Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and you can check out How to Do Everything, the new podcast from the producers of Wait Wait, this week, How to Make Your Truck Your Home. Hi, you're on Wait Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jeff Jordan. I'm from Griffin, Georgia.
Hey, how are things in Griffin, Georgia?
Very nice, thank you.
I'm glad to hear it. Now, I don't know where Griffin is. Where is it?
It's about 20 miles south of Atlanta Airport. So if you've ever been through here on the airport, you've been near Griffin.
I have. I sensed a certain Griffin-ness.
That was it. That's why you were there for 3 hours.
Yes, exactly. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, Carl Castle, of course, is going to perform for you 3 news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly and 2 of the limericks, you will be a big winner. Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here's your first one.
At work, we are wishing we knew just how well we all do what we do. Finding out once a year won't assuage half our fears, so we're getting a daily...
Flu. I don't know.
Oh, it's a two-word answer, rhymes with new and... Or two-syllable answer, rather. Rhymes with we knew, we do...
You get a yearly...
I don't know.
How about review?
How about that? Oh, review. That's
a
it.
Hey, you're review. Right.
Peter, that was a great hint.
Yeah. It was. Well, every employee hates the annual performance review, but according to the Wall Street Journal, things are about to change. Get ready for the daily performance review in your workplace. Look for feedback like, he's got a good attitude, but he's unable to complete any major projects because of the constant performance reviews. All right. Still have 2 more chances. Let's get these right. Here's your next one.
Some wedding traditions grow weaker, but footwear is getting much sleeker. I say my I do's in rubber-soled shoes. Yes, I'm wearing white bridal
sneakers.
Yes, indeed. Bridal sneakers. A Paris... Bridal Salon introduced a line of high-fashion satin bridal sneakers. They are flying off the shelves. They're perfect for the modern bride who values comfort over style and wants to be able to quickly flee either from the marriage or towards the next one. Endorsement deals are already in the works. From the makers of Chuck Taylors, how about Liz Taylors?
Apparently not.
Right. Here is your last limerick.
In bed, we're joined by our pup. The boy kicks in his sleep. I jump up. Some plastic I sew to protect what's below. My jammies now feature a...
cup.
Yes, indeed. Wow. Every parent of young children knows about this. You go to sleep in your own comfy bed. You wake up in the middle of a cage wrestling match between yourself and a bunch of toddlers who had nightmares... and they each have 2 knees that act like crotch-seeking missiles. So, one Australian inventor and presumably parent is now selling pajamas with heavy-duty padding in the key region. It's an alternative to the simpler solution, don't have kids.
Well, if you wear those pajamas, you're not going to have to worry about that.
That's true. Carl, how did Jeff do?
Jeff had 2 correct answers, Peter, so he wins our prize. Congratulations, Jeff.
Well done. Congratulations, Jeff, and thanks so much for playing.
Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Can I kick it? Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead, Peter. She has 4 points. Kiri O'Connor and Charlie Pierce are tied for second. Each has 2.
Okay. We have flipped a coin. Kiri's elected to go second. Charlie, that means you're up first. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Astronauts at the International Space Station were able to see the severe blanks sweeping across Texas this week.
The wildfires.
Right. The National Climactic Data Center said Thursday that this summer was the blankest in the U.S. in 75 years.
Wettest.
No, hottest. Oh. Hottest. Ooh. Carol Bartz, the CEO for search engine company Blank, was fired over the phone on Tuesday.
Yahoo.
Right. Two of the top campaign managers for Republican presidential candidate Blank stepped aside on Monday.
Michelle Bachmann.
Right. A Dutch woman denied stalking her ex-boyfriend, even though in the past year she blanked.
Tackled him.
No, called him 65,000 times.
Oh.
In a game Thursday night, the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints kicked off this year's Blank season.
National Football League.
Yes, Google announced Thursday that it was buying the restaurant guide publisher Blank.
Zagat.
Right. An online ad for the British National Health offended diversity groups because it included the line Blank.
It's a man's world in the National Health Service.
No. It included the line, quote, usual rubbish about equal opportunity employer, etc.
I take it this was an oversight?
Yes.
Okay.
It described the duties of the job as being mind-crushingly boring, and the salary is totally inadequate. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and Charlie has taken the lead.
Well done, Charlie. All right, then. Kiri, you are up next.
Okay.
Here we go. Fill in the blank. On Thursday, audio tapes were released of air traffic controllers dealing with the hijackings on Blank.
Oh, 9/11.
Right. In interviews this week, former Vice President Dick Cheney said he thinks that Blank should run for president against Obama.
Clinton.
Yes, Hillary Clinton. According to reports from Tripoli, Libya's central bank sold 29 tons of gold in the spring so Blank could pay salaries.
Gaddafi.
Right. Thousands of Russians gathered Thursday to mourn the Blank players killed in a plane crash this week.
Ice hockey.
Right. In honor of a Saturday Night Live sketch poking fun at NPR, Ben & Jerry's announced it would now be making Blank flavor ice cream.
Sweaty balls.
Sweaty balls. It was announced this week that November 18th is the last date that Blank will host his show with Kelly Ripa.
Regis Philbin.
Right. Google changed its logo on Tuesday to celebrate what would have been the 61st birthday of Queen frontman Blank.
Freddie Mercury.
Yes, it was a pretty good one. A family in Lake Tahoe watched from the house as a black bear blanked.
A black bear in the woods.
No. A black bear. I didn't know they did that. No. A black bear stole their car. Black bear goes over to their Prius. Turns out bears are liberals. Jumps into the Prius, puts it in reverse, and crashed it right into their neighbor's porch.
Wow.
So the next time you go camping and someone tells you you're more likely to die in a car accident than be eaten by a bear, remind them that if you're lucky, you can have both at once. Carl, how did Kiri do in our quiz?
Kiri had a fine round, Peter. 7 correct answers, 14 more points. She now has 16 points and the lead.
Well done. So how many, then, does Paula Poundstone need to win this time?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
Feeling good? Feeling up to it?
You know what's bothering me?
What,
Paula? Is the conclusion you drew about bears. I don't think because one bear goes into a Prius means that all bears are liberals.
You think there are other bears driving Hummers?
I think that you'd take it bear by bear.
Here we go, Paula.
Yeah.
This is for the game.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank. Over 100,000 people in Pennsylvania and the Northeast were forced to evacuate to escape blanks caused by Tropical Storm Lee.
Flooding?
Right. A federal appeals court threw out Virginia's lawsuit against President Obama's blank law.
Against President Obama's health law?
Yes. Authorities investigated what caused a man to open fire in a blank in Nevada on Tuesday.
I have.
Right. NASA released photos that show rover tracks, footprints, and clutter left behind by astronauts on the blank.
On the moon?
Right. An Anchorage woman saved her dachshund from a black bear by blanking.
Putting it in front of the Prius.
No. Punching the bear in the face.
Whoa!
Boom. Boom! The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced that Blank will host this year's Oscar ceremony.
Eddie Murphy?
Yes. After a 3-week search, villagers and experts in the Philippines captured a 20-foot-long, 2,300-pound blank alive.
Crocodile.
Right. A San Diego man's attempt to rob a convenience store was foiled by blank.
Black bear and a Prius.
No. His own gigantic Gumby costume. He never had a chance. The 7-Eleven clerk. So the guy goes up. He's dressed as Gumby. This is on the surveillance camera. He goes up and he says, give me your money. And the 7-Eleven clerk thought it was a joke and said, I don't have time for this. And then Gumby says, I have a gun. But when he tried to get it, his giant Gumby hands would not fit into his pocket. And instead of pulling out the gun, he dropped 26 cents in change onto the floor. And that was the end of the robbery.
People don't know this, but that's the only thing that kept Gumby straight.
Really? Carl. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
She needed six to tie. She had six correct answers.
Well,
so it's 16
there
points.
You
Gary
go.
Gary O'Connor and Paula Poundstone, this week's co-champions.
So glad you could walk over the finish line together. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict what the post office will do to save itself from oblivion. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Reputation.com, with tools to monitor and protect the online reputations of doctors, lawyers, and business professionals. Learn more at Reputation.com. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at SKOLL.org. And the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at HouseLogic.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago. In association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Assistant house manager, Jessica McLeod. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Popcan Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what is the post office going to do to save itself? Paula Poundstone.
Put a third clerk on when it's busy.
That could be all they need. Charlie Pierce.
Porn stamps. Collect them all.
And Kiri O'Connor.
Restart the Pony Express, not because it would save money, it would just be so cool.
Well, if the post office does any of that paddle, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kiri O'Connor, Charlie Pierce, Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you next week from Portland, Oregon. This is NPR.